Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the darkened corridors of power, and we shine a light ahead of us on the path where evolution is leading. Purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right front and center, to face the music and dance together, to address problems rather than defend positions. Well, we have another purpose as well, and that is to provide a context at a time when the content can be contradictory, confusing, and overwhelming. I'm broadcasting this week from Northern California, where smoke from a distant and not so distant fire has given us a taste of what we fear might be, quote unquote, the new normal, compromising the breath of life itself. Now, while it's easy to point a finger at fossil fuel companies, as Swami Beyondananda would tell us, finger pointing is pointless, and here is my point. As that one finger points at something or someone out there, there are three fingers pointing back at us. Again, we have a context. Climate crisis, to the extent that humans have mitigated, is really a crisis for all of humanity, for our species. It's a crisis of consciousness, of belief, and of being unaware of the otherwise invisible web of life that infuses our every cell. Again, as Swami would tell us, if we lose the earth, there goes the GDP. I'm also reminded of a famous quote from Mahatma Gandhi. Apparently, when he was asked what he thought about Western civilization, he replied, "Oh, I think it would be a very good idea." So, while our civilization has been excellent at science and technology and the gleaning of material knowledge, we seem to be on the verge of flunking wisdom 1.1. Ever since we put Descartes before the horse nearly four centuries ago, our society has focused on the material world as the be-all and end-all. And the end-all idea may be exactly where we are headed. Thanks to focusing on the rational mind at the expense of the intuitive and the patriarchal notion of man dominating nature, we have continued to act as if that's true, and it's been at our peril. As Paul Ehrlich famously said, nature bats last, and she has some heavy hitters coming up, fire, tornadoes, hurricanes, and floods. So, in contrast, as a possible solution, what if millions or maybe billions of us took a simple vow with a singular intention to heal and harmonize the web of life? I promise to be the best lover and defender of the earth that I can be. I promise to be the best lover and defender of the earth that I can be. Can taking such a vow make a difference? Well, our guest today on Wiki Politiki, Skylar Wilson, thinks so. He, along with Jennifer Barrett Listig and the noted theologian and priest Matthew Fox, father of creation spirituality, have founded a new spiritual order for our time, the Order of the Sacred Earth. Together, they've written a new book, Order of the Sacred Earth, an intergenerational vision of love and action. Order of the Sacred Earth, a truly new world order to help us overgrow the old world odor of exploitation, extraction, extortion, and saddest of all, extinction. So we're happy to have you. Welcome, Skylar.
Thank you, Steve. It's great to be here with you.
Very good. And we're both experiencing a little smokiness outside, right?
Very much so, yes. It's it's hard to see the sun.
It's hard to see the sun. We need sun, and we need the air, and we need rain, and the elements are seem to be working on behalf of our planet, not necessarily the immediate requirements of our species. So the sacred order, Skylar, how did the sacred order of the Earth, the order of the sacred Earth, how did it come about, and how did you become involved with it?
Thank you, Steve. Before I get started on that, I just want to say how much I appreciate your work, and I've listened to your podcast here, and just feel like it's such an important thing to set the context and to get to the core of what's deeper than the polarizing forces of media and politics. So thank you for that, and I think this is going to be a great conversation. So. The Order of the Sacred Earth is it first started as a dream. It just so happened that Matthew Fox and I both had a dream around the same time, and we know that because we work together often through a number of other avenues, including the Cosmic Mass, which I could tell you about later. But he called me up and told me about this dream, and in the dream, it was a very, it was a prophetic dream in the sense that he saw the letters, just do it, and there were exclamation points. And when he was reflecting on the dream, he was like, do what? And that's when he realized it was to create a spiritual order that's open to all religions and people of all political and perspectives, as long as they focus on one thing, which is to be the best lover and defender of the earth. And that's our common context. And so my dream that I had at that time was of groups of people gathering together in a sacred way. And it was such a tangible dream. It was so, I could feel it. It was larger than life. And there's actually two parts to the dream. One, we were around this sacred fire that had been going since the start of existence, and we were gazing into the fire and gazing into each other's eyes, and it was just a feeling of connection with the sacred, with the order of life. And then the second part of the dream was levitating above San Francisco at sunrise, and so there was a kind of magical quality to it. And so when he told me about his dream, I was like turned on by it, and I was like, you know, wanted to finish his sentences, and so we started working on it then. This was about 4 years ago, and Jennifer Barrett Listug is my partner. We have a child together, and so she was very involved in the whole process as well, and has had her own dreams about creating a social spiritual platform for activists and spiritually oriented people to come together. And so we've done that work together through rites of passage and other avenues for years now. And so the three of us decided to work on this together. And we've talked to hundreds of people since. We wrote the book, Order of the Sacred Earth. And we've been working on it since. And it's been exciting to see it kind of manifesting and emerging in all kinds of nonlinear ways, which I can talk about.
I'm very interested in the word intergenerational in your subtitle. Obviously, you know, Matthew Fox is an elder. You know, he's in relation to you and Jennifer. He's certainly a father and perhaps a grandfather. How does this intergenerational element weave into the order?
Thank you. Yes, the intergenerational piece is very important because I realize, and Jennifer realizes, I think, that that our generation doesn't have all the answers, and no one generation does. And in Matthew's essay in the book, he writes about how Neanderthals differed from our early ancestors in that they didn't live as long. They lived to only about 30. And so it was actually having a third generation that gave us the tools and the support to become human and to grow into who we are now. So I look at that example as being paramount to what it means to be human, is to be connected across generations, to be able to see change over longer periods of time, even though it's still, the human life isn't very long when you look at geological time or Earth time. And so gaining as much perspective as possible, and specifically with Matthew Fox, he has spent over 50 years working on what he would call bringing traditions with a lowercase t, not a capitalized t, into relevance in the immediate present, and so bringing creation spirituality, which is an earth-based Christian mystical tradition that also encompasses a lot of other traditions, making it accessible to the modern mind, and a lot of his writing has done that. And so this idea of lineage, of where do we come from, is really helpful to know where we're going, and to be able to speak about differences and commonalities, and realize that although there are many differences between generations, there's still way more commonalities, and we can gain perspective in those conversations. And so it's very healing, and my relationship with him has been both activating and healing in many ways, and grateful to have him as a friend, a mentor, and a grandfather. And so so I've gained a lot of perspective in the mentorship about my purpose, and it's been very activating, and I think mutually beneficial to have the perspectives of our different generations.
Because we have had generational disconnection with everybody living in their separate bubbles, and you know, the wisdom and information doesn't get translated in that way. Plus, we have if we look at the two dominant traditions, a tradition of monotheistic Abrahamic religion, there's an off-planet God, and so there's a kind of a otherworldly aspect to it, that we're just kind of doing a little apprenticeship here, and if we're good, we go to heaven; if we're bad, we go to hell. And so this particular world, it's not a this worldly kind of religious system. And then, of course, we have scientific materialism, which tells us that, technology, uber alles, will master, will overcome all of our problems through technology. We have information, but not wisdom. So how do you see this this new order impacting the current, the new word of describing our climate issues, our situation. How will this sacred order impact that?
Well, ultimately, I don't know. But what we've been speculating on and having conversations on and deepening into an experience of is of connection with the planet, in which is a remedy to what you're speaking about. Scientific materialism, which has gone quite far in one direction, and then transcendent religions in the other direction of kind of up and out, getting out of, seeing salvation as being beyond what's possible, truly possible on this planet now. With the order, it takes on a panentheist approach, which is the philosophy that the divine, or the source of life and goodness, is here and now. It's present in the earth, it's present in us, and it's present in the way that we're in conversation with life. And so very specifically, there is the need to get really grounded at this time of chaos and unraveling on many fronts, and also the very loud voices of media and kind of the surface level voices that are saying this is the source of the problem, that's the source of the problem, and really sinking below those polarizing arguments to what is our nature and how do we live in accord with that nature. How do we really tune into what we are as human beings on an alive planet? And so our narrative with the Order of the Sacred Earth is that we come from an alive, vital earth, a that has a presence to it. We don't have to name it as even a consciousness, but we might even say that it has an awareness, and we come out of that awareness and it sustains us in every way. And so that's really the fundamental philosophy of the order. And so the question that we ask is, how can we become the best lovers and defenders of the earth? How do we participate with our own evolution and with what creates vitality and life, and in order to come alive to that and remember that, so that we can serve that at this time? And it's no small venture. We realize this is a big problem, so to speak, is coming to what's true right now, and acting, because we don't have much time. The United Nations has recently put out a report that we have about 12 years before it's global warming, climate change has gotten to the point where the Earth's systems are so diminished that it can't self-regulate and in the way that it has. So we're not interested in focusing on the problems as much as the solutions, and so that's what we explore in the book in a very humble way, not really saying that we know exactly how to do that, but that it's really important that we come together in a new way now, that we nourish all of these different threads of social, political, ecological change.
Well, Skyler, we're going to take a very short break. When we come back, we can go a little bit deeper into this. We're talking with Skyler Wilson. He is a co-author of a new book on the order of sacred of the sacred earth. Steve Behrman will be back with WikiPolitiki shortly.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
Hi, this is recording artist and composer Yuval Ron, inviting you to a voyage through the chakras, a new double album of guided meditations to transform your life, a sublime musical medicine for nourishing inner peace and reaching to your higher virtues. Get it now at metamindfulnessmusic.com, M-E-T-T-A, mindfulnessmusic.com.
In the wake of a disaster, what one thing can you send that will help people the most? A blanket, a tent, a sandbag, a doctor. Actually, if you send a monetary donation, you send all these things. Even a small donation can make a big impact and can quickly become exactly what people affected by disaster need most.
In the wake of a hurricane, your monetary donation can make a huge difference to those in need. To donate, visit supporthurricanerelief.org. That's supporthurricanerelief.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hello, Hello, this is Steve Behrman. We're back with our guest, Skylar Wilson. We're talking about a new book, The Order of the Sacred Earth. Skylar, as we're seeing, the dire sense of emergency has really, I think, left people paralyzed because the changes that are required are in a certain way beyond what we have learned how to do in this so-called capitalist materialist system. How does this new order address this very, very deep, what a friend of mine calls primal anxiety because of this crisis, and giving us comfort and simultaneously mobilizing us for this very short amount of time we have to make a difference?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a big question and a good one. And what gives me hope in the face of this large, somewhat difficult situation that we're in is the recognition that we're the ones who are creating the problem. We're the ones who are holding ourselves back. And we have all the technology. That I was just at the Parliament of the World's Religions in Toronto this past week, and there was climate scientists talking about that there are plans that are really, really solid for how we could move to a completely ecological society. And we have all the technology to do that, to move off of fossil fuels, et cetera. And the only thing that's holding us back is developing the social ability to come together to do that and not to put that task not to reduce it. It's a big task. But we're capable of confronting it, and the Order of the Sacred Earth is really about going inward and recovering the sense of values and commitment and energy that has created us and is going to help us move forward. And so, in addressing the chaos that we're in and that's necessary for the creativity of creating a new human relationship with everything, with the planet.
So at the World Parliament of Religions, did you have a chance to present this, or were you there as just an observer?
We did. Matthew, Jennifer, and I put on a ritual called the Cosmic Mass, which we've put on many times all around the country. And it goes into many mystical traditions and pulls out practices that we can do, including grieving. And we were presenting the Order of the Sacred Earth during that ritual as one solution to gain the resources, the inner resources and energy necessary to confront these problems. And there was about 500 people there, and I had a couple of people come up to me afterwards saying that it was the most powerful experience of their lives. And I think part of that could have been that we went so deeply into the grieving. We actually had a grieving portion, but we framed it in a positive light, that there's still so much more good here and vital in us and on the planet. That's really helping us to go forward. And so we also connected to the ancestors and just all the thousands of generations that have come before us and all that they did so that we could be here, and feeling the support of that, feeling the support of the scientists that are now working really hard to come up with solutions. And so then the ritual ends with a celebration dance for justice and compassion. So it's a really integral and embodied ritual. And there's a lot of power and creativity that comes out of us gathering together in these ways, not just talking about these problems, but getting to our core, so to speak.
More and more and more, I think people are recognizing that because our civilization has been so mental and so focused on ideas and the mind and structure and the visible, that we've forgotten the invisible and the things, the field that really impacts the particle. As Einstein said, the field is the sole governing agency over the particle. And we, in this material world, what can we do? We'll recycle, whatever it is. And what we miss then is there is a fundamental perception of who we are and what it means to be human that I don't think that the Abrahamic religions really, really approach. So I'm curious as to how, so far, how has this been received by people in quote-unquote mainstream religions and also people who would call themselves atheists or agnostics?
Good question. Yes, I actually, in the last two cosmic masses that we've done, I've had more people come up to me that were atheists or were Catholic priests or were people that I hadn't really heard from as much before that. And I think that the unraveling of our, you know, the chaos of our current times is actually helpful in having people who would have potentially been more fundamentalist in their holding of reality start to ask deeper questions and realize that community is really what's needed more than community that's diverse is needed more than community that's just being with people that are philosophically like-minded. And so that's been very, I feel like the times are actually very exciting in a lot of ways because this unraveling, this chaos is creating more community, more openness to, it's humbling us. It's bringing us closer to the earth. That's what humility means. It comes from the word humus or soil. And so I believe that us getting together and really humbling ourselves in service of the planet is our common core. And so we don't really use the word God in our cosmic masses, maybe sometimes just to honor it along with the other words. But for us, it's mainly about cosmic creativity and connection, the Buddha nature, the cosmic Christ, which is that principle of creativity that's inherent in the universe and the 14 billion years of evolution. And so that's really what we connect to in the ritual. And I think people from all different backgrounds of faith and non-faith alike can get behind that and feel excited by that kind of coming together. And a good friend, Maladoma Somme, the West African spiritual teacher, sure, says there's no community without ritual. There's no community without ritual. And what I feel him saying and what I understand him saying based on these experiences of ritual is that when we come together at a core level, at an emotional level, and connect to that field that you are speaking about, that Einstein is speaking about, then there's something that almost the field gets stronger when we, and it's almost like it settles in on everybody, and the sense of connection is so much stronger, it's so powerful that it's tangible, it can be felt. And that's, I think, where what these people are experiencing, that there aren't many experiences like that in our day-to-day world that's very much based on fracturing and the individual versus the community.
Well, you know, in terms of these rituals and so on, you mentioned Maladoma. In 1996, we attended a conference at Kripalu Institute in Massachusetts, and it was called Embracing the Human Shadow, and Kripalu had undergone a crisis where they had to exile their spiritual leader and send him to a home for wayward gurus because of some perpetration. And the people there were feeling really devastated. They were feeling betrayed. And Maladoma led a grief ceremony on Saturday night. And as you said, you know, grief is really the emotion that we want to gloss over that in our culture. You know, it doesn't sell. You know, it doesn't sell toothpaste. And so, you know, we go past that grief point. But by experiencing the grief, what happened was the grief led to a drumming circle, and from the drumming circle, I had no plan to perform comedy that night. But as the drums became louder, people began to shout for the Swami, and they wanted comedy because they had, in a certain regard, by embodying this grief, by allowing themselves to run it through their own physical systems, they were ready. They had earned the right to celebrate, and that's exactly what happened. So that was a very, very powerful moment, and I can imagine, because this issue of possibly losing our place in the web of life, I think life will continue on Earth, but we may lose our place. And so this is something that impacts every one of us. So again, if you can come up with something that's really going to help people simultaneously acknowledge and accept where we are, there's a sigh of great relief that takes place because we don't have to pretend anymore. That takes energy.
Mm-hmm. It takes energy, and it keeps us at the surface level when we're spending all that energy pushing the grief away, when really it's something that can empower us when we go deep into it. It can bring us to a level of depth that's quite amazing and profound, and it can often, grief can help us to remove these obstacles to our current situation, in the sense that we can almost like pulling out at the roots some of these maladaptive patterns, these patterns of forgetfulness and of patterns of the modern world that often keep us from that primal reality of what it means to be alive and to feel at an emotional and deep level what we're connected to, which is everything. And so, yeah, most of the time people come up after these rituals, and they do say that the grief portion was the most profound for them, because they had never grieved with other people before, or with 500 other people, and they didn't even know that it was there. And Matthew always quotes Aquinas in saying that you might find this bear inside of you that just wants to roar. And so oftentimes there's this roar in the crowd and this anger and all these different emotions, and then it starts to soften and go into these. So there's all these layers that can sort of unravel and move around, and we often feel and experience things in the collective too that are beyond us and in us. And so it's good to grieve together, because it can be more powerful. We can do work on a collective level and support those who most need it, but also support all of us at the same time.
In the book, one of the contributors, I'm not remembering who, mentions hospicing, that there is a hospicing and a midwifing process going on, and you know the grieving has to do with that. What about, you know, what's the hospice aspect of what is it that has to be put to rest, so to speak, and
Yeah, so that's part of our narrative the story that we're telling in the book, is that we are in the dark night of the soul, so to speak. We're in a rite of passage as a species, and there is something that literally needs to die. There's something in the modern culture that needs to die, and there's also something in each of us that needs to die. And for something to actually, for a rite of passage in all cultures that practice rites of passage, the outcome can't be certain. You can't know that you're just going to make it through, or else it doesn't work, because something really does need to die. It's like a caterpillar that completely dissolves in the chrysalis and then becomes a butterfly. It literally, it becomes a soup, and then something new emerges, and we don't really know. We have some perspective. We've got amazing visionary minds looking towards the future of what an ecological civilization would look like individually and collectively, but we don't really know what that is. And so there's a lot of humility, and that's part of facing death is inviting in that humility and being in the darkness and allowing ourselves to let go at the level necessary in order to receive new visions and insights for our next action. So it's a Buddhist idea as well. It's just being in the emptiness and the not knowing and how powerful that can be. And in terms of connecting with wisdom and with what I believe is the planet herself. And so in order to have an intersubjective relationship with the planet, we have to get out of our purely anthropocentric or self-centered projecting all the time of what we are and what we're doing. And I think that's just so loud in our waking world that the night is a really good analogy to think about of spending time in the darkness and allowing that process to happen over and over and to invite it at larger and larger levels. And I think that the signs of the unraveling are all around us. We're already in it. It's clear so many things are not working. So rather than jumping to what the solutions are, I believe that we need to go deep and go inward first. And so that's a lot of what the Order of the Sacred Earth is about, is in order to gaining a focus with the vow and with connecting deeply to our values, it allows us, it gives us the structure and the support that we need to let go of everything else that isn't connected with that. And a lot of people have come up to me and told me that how powerful that's been just to have that support and that focus, and that they've been able to start to let go of some of these other patterns that are very deep in us, consumerism, habits of numbing ourselves and addiction and social media and all of these things that we can just spend so much time fiddling and distracting ourselves at a collective and individual level that we don't actually get to that nourishing core, that hospice work, so to speak. And you know, as a culture, we're very afraid of death, and it might not be so bad. I forget who said it. It's on the edge of my mind, but that we're so afraid of the dark abyss, but it might just be a feather bed. It might be an Alan Watts or yeah, but it might just be a feather bed that we're falling into, and yeah.
Okay, well, we'll be back with Skylar Wilson after this break and talk more about the Order of Sacred Earth. Steve Behrman, Wiki Politiki.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
The Shift Network, presenting transformative programs and events to help you awaken to your full potential so that together we can build the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Our classes support you in finding and cultivating your gifts and in bringing those gifts to the world to create tangible change and connect us as global citizens. Go to theshiftnetwork.com or follow the link on the Wiki Politiki sponsors page.
Hi, this is New Age Grammy winner Paul Avgerinos. Thanks for listening to Om Times Radio, and please support my peaceful healing music with a purchase at iTunes, Amazon, or wherever you shop for fine music. Just put my name into the search engine, Paul Avgerinos, A, V like Victor, G like George, E-R-I-N-O-S. You can also visit me at roundskymusic.com. Thanks for listening, and I'm wishing you the brightest of blessings.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hi, Steve Behrman. I'm back with Skylar Wilson in a very juicy and very necessary and very timely and pertinent conversation about the order of the sacred earth. You know, as you were talking about some of the things that have kept us from a lot, from feeling the grief and feeling the loss, those of us who've been born after World War II and so on, we've experienced a world that's very different from the world before us, and we've had what I would call the delusion of certainty that, you know, people my parents' age, they believed that they would be able to retire, and they actually were. They were able to retire and, you know, have a life for, you know, 20 or 30 years after that and so on. And now what we're seeing is all of the structures of this unsustainable civilization naturally falling away, and in that it's not just the physical structures of buildings burning and so on and being destroyed. It's the structure of the illusion of separation, the illusion of our separation from the physical world, from the natural world, from the web of life, from other humans, from this community that you mentioned earlier. So, Skylar, how do you see this this order playing out over the next period of time in terms of your work and Jennifer's work, Matt's work, and so on?
Beautifully said, Steve. I really like that, the illusions falling away. And the barriers falling away, and you can see in that falling away, which is so obvious to some of us, there's also and I think this is often the case, there's a fundamentalist kind of holding on at the same in reaction to that. And so I think a lot of what we're seeing is those patterns of holding on are becoming more obvious and more ugly politically and socially, and so a lot of what I see us doing at the Order of the Sacred Earth is, it's not just my work, it's not just Jennifer's work or Matthew's work, but it's creating a context where we can all, everybody who's involved in social, political, ecological activism, and there's so many different movements that are afoot right now, women's movement, the Black Lives Matter movement, Standing Rock, we see all these movements gaining speed and lifting each other up and realizing that we're all doing the same thing and we're responding to the same need to evolve and change at a deep level. And so when we can recognize our commonality, and like the Dalai Lama says, if you can't help somebody else, at least don't hurt them. And I'd like to think that we can learn how to move away from some of those unconscious ways that we were divisive and were competitive, and some of these basic mammalian instincts and the left brain sort of fight or flight reptilian kind of reaction, which I see all around. It's in us as humans, but we need to evolve beyond that to more compassion, to justice, and develop the courage and the humility to to not just be promoting ourselves all the time, but be lifting up other people who need it and who have a lot to offer. And so I see it as this emergent network, and as such, it doesn't have a center, and it doesn't have a linear direction, but I see it as this net, or almost like a mycelial web in the soil that's connecting all the trees and all the centers of new growth and new possibility. And so that's what we're seeing. There's been, I'm not sure how many we're calling them pods. Actually, somebody else started a pod and told us, and we said, oh, that's a great idea, pods. And so there's, I would say at least 15 or 20 that we've been told about all over the country. And they're just starting with a regular meeting, an intergenerational council, and to identify what the most pressing local needs are, and also how they can plug in to this wider movement. And so I see that as being a first step, is connecting at a deep level, doing some of the grieving, whatever it may be, whatever's present, but also starting to taking the vow, if that's what you feel called to do, meditating on that. What does that mean for me? It's a very it's a simple step, but a profound step. And then we're also just like any emergent process, it's a feedback loop where we continue to take information from those who are telling us, hey, this is working, or we're doing this, or we noticed this, and taking that in and replicating some of that in whatever ways that we can, and sharing it and disseminating it. So
obviously, yeah. You're not looking at becoming an institution, the institution.
No.
And is there a way for people to quote unquote join, to go count me in, to go I'm with this, so that there is a sense of a burgeoning group of people? I mean, and you mentioned the pods, of course. And is there anything mm-hmm. like that, so for people to quote unquote join the movement?
So just communicating with us by email, and our email is orderofthesacredearth@gmail.com, and our website is orderofthesacredearth.org. Communicating with us your stories and what you're up to and how we can support your work. That's one way to quote unquote join. But to answer your question, there's no formal way to join. In an institutional sense, we don't send you a badge or we're not trying to become a governing body, so to speak. We believe that staying grassroots is really in our best interest, and being light on our feet. And Matthew likes to say that we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, so we want to stay connected to tradition and lineage and how it can serve us now. And so we don't want to become too loose in the sense that we're just open to everything all at once, but we also don't want to become too structured and, build a big center or church or anything like that. We don't feel like that's necessary. We feel like most of the meetings can happen in people's houses and in the woods and retreat centers or wherever. But it's a grassroots movement, and it's one where the way to join is to understand, to get the impulse, which a lot of people are, to be the best lover and defender of the earth that they can be, and then to start doing that work, and in that way, that's the best way to push this movement forward. And we're definitely noticing that, and want to continue to write about it and put people's experiences on our website. And so in that sharing, realizing, oh, what's emerging now, and that's the way that I see it growing and shifting, and
And of course, by the stories that are posted, by what the feedback and feed forward that people give, that gives everybody else ideas about what they could be doing in their community. Mm-hmm. And when you were talking about these local groups that are emerging, Bruce Lipton and I, in Spontaneous Evolution, we talk about this next phase of human awareness and evolution, recognizing we're all cells in the same body called humanity, and now taking it further that we're really all interwoven cells in the body of Gaia. We have microbiomes inside our body that are not us, and there's more of them than there are of our human cells. So the more we learn about how intertwined everything is, we see that life does flow on within us and without us. So these new cells, these new pods, perhaps are the organs, the beginning organelles, let's say, of a new body politic that is in touch with the web of life, that is creating structures that are resonant with that rather than those that are resisting that. So I think that, the value.
That's a great point. And I just want to reiterate that the evolution of the cell is such a good analogy, because it's from single cell to multi, like eukaryotic cells, prokaryotic to eukaryotic cells, the evolution had to do with the membrane, the cell membrane that allowed certain things in, and it was semi-permeable. It could get certain things out. And so we see that as sort of the intelligence of the pod, is it's self-selecting people who feel like they're going through this change and they're ready to serve and step up and be open and interact in this way, find each other and evolve together as a result into something more. So I really like that analogy.
You know, one of the sources of disheartenment over the past period of time is the instead of having a governance right now that is open to moving forward with, you know, pulling us together to cooperate on behalf of the Earth, you know, we have everybody is in it for themselves, you know, kind of the last gasp perhaps of that particular system. How do you rehearten and remotivate people who've been, let's say, damaged by the hatefulness and by the frustration and by what seems to be hopelessness and futility?
That's a great question. Well, my belief, and from what I've studied with Jungian psychology and shamanism, etc., is that the wound is really, it's a sacred wound, and that there is no such thing as being damaged in any kind of concrete way, but it's really a deepening into, you know, what is our gifts. And so working with people to reframe their story and to feel their grief, to go into it, those are some of the ways that healing can occur, and that we can move through the rite of passage that otherwise could destroy us. And it's really a combination of support and mirroring and just relating and feeling supported and connected to others, so that we can do that individual work, which is so important to our social movements. So I do think that's a great question, because it's not an easy thing to do. I've done a lot of work on myself and enough to realize that there's so much more to do. So I think I could spend my whole lifetime in a monastery just reflecting on myself. And yet I realize I'm living at a time where I don't feel like that would be the best use of my time. And so we have to do that inner work as we're engaging with the world, and both can be a mirror for one another. The more I kind of what you were saying, I think in one of your podcasts about when you point the finger, three fingers come back at you, and it's difficult, but when you accept that the wound is part of life, and you can open to the fact that we are not our wounds, but they're in us, and they're in us in an important way to grow, then it's not we're not fighting against it. We're not trying to keep the pain away. We're not trying to keep people from seeing our true selves, because we actually have the tools to compost it and to work and change as we were seeing, so to speak.
Wow, what an interesting and fruitful conversation. We've been talking with Skylar Wilson. He's the co-author of a new book, Order of the Sacred Earth, with his partner Jennifer Listug, I'm sorry, I got the vowels mixed up, and Matt Fox. And, you know, this is interesting because to me it reminds me of Joseph Campbell's notion of the hero's journey and the reluctant hero. That's us. That's our us collectively. We would rather go about our lives and do the individual things and, you know, have those things that are, you know, the people look for when they graduate high school and are looking forward to a life of individual achievement and fulfillment. And yet we're being called to something bigger that involves our entire species. And so the entire species, our acting as a species, is the hero in this movie, an all-time classic movie, you know, humanity, will we make it or not? And again, I appreciate what you said about the uncertainty of not making it makes this journey really worthwhile. This is Steve Behrman. Yeah. We're on Wiki Politiki. Thank you, Skylar Wilson, for being our guest, and we will be with you next week.